Good morning, everyone. This year, April 22nd to be exact, will be the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. Now, as you know, during our quarantine and physical distancing practices, the number one recommendation from doctors, healthcare workers, spiritual leaders, across the board, scientists, is to get outside, enjoy the earth, feel the healing energy the earth has to offer. Actually, the earth offers everything we need right now: calm, order, peace, to step outside and be part of that. Now, that advice is not new. Back in a few years ago, Henry David Thoreau said this: live in each season as it passes, breathe the air, drink the drink, taste the fruit, and resign yourself to the influence of the earth. So, a little known fact, when I was in junior high school and high school, I was a real astronomy geek. In fact, I thought that I was going to be an astrophysicist before I chose music as my calling. I would love the planets. I memorized all the planets, their moons, how far they were from the sun. Even at a young age, I would love to just stare up at the moon and all of its phases and just imagine I was there. And even though I knew it was 250,000 miles away, sometimes it looked like I could just reach up and touch it. Now, I've retained a lot of that love for astronomy in my old age. I love science fiction. I always tune into Neil deGrasse Tyson to hear about the latest black holes and supernovas, whatever he has to talk about. And I still love to just stare up at the moon in whatever phase it's in and just imagine, being there. The moon is just a beautiful, hypnotic thing for me. So as you can imagine, when we had our total eclipse, and it was 2.5 years ago, but it had such an impact on me, I couldn't believe it had been already 2.5 years. It seemed like it was just yesterday to me. Here in Virginia, we were really close to the shadow path. So we were gearing up. And I remember when I was growing up that I would make these little cardboard things so you wouldn't look at the sun, where the sun would come through, and then you'd hold a paper plate and you'd see the little ball of light on the paper plate. And then when the moon started coming over that little ball of light, you could see it disappearing. It was very exciting. I ran in to tell Paula, come on out, let's watch it out here. And she was in there watching TV, and the most gorgeous, amazing pictures of the eclipse were on TV, live from Oregon or Texas, wherever it was, close up full screen of the actual eclipse and not a little spot of light on a paper plate. So it was awe-inspiring to see our meek little moon block out the mighty sun. It was just a wonderful experience that the whole world shared. But the moment that everybody was waiting for, the scientists and people alike, is when that few moments when the moon completely eclipses the sun, and the sun's outer atmosphere, which is called the corona, by the way, the sun's outer atmosphere finally becomes visible because it's always been blocked by the sun. Scientists can't really study it that well. But during this eclipse, when the moon comes across and becomes visible, and it just bursts into light. And this is what it looked like. That beautiful, just for a few moments, we see that corona, the sun's outer atmosphere. And it's like the moon takes this big breath, and it goes, oh, and then boom, and like, ta-da, here we are. It's just was a beautiful thing, captivating, and it went all around the world. And the sun, the moon, putting on a show for us here on Earth. It was really an amazingly globally unifying experience that really gave us all the feeling that we're connected, we share this gradually shrinking blue boat that we're on. So here's the astronomy geek talking. Did you know that a solar eclipse like this is very rare? In fact, it's non-existent in our solar system, which means it could be non-existent everywhere in the galaxy. So here it is. What makes a solar eclipse possible is that the moon is about 400 times closer to the Earth than the sun, yet the sun is about 400 times larger than our moon. And this means that the apparent size of both the moon and the sun is about the same as seen from the Earth. And because the sizes match up so well, that's what makes this total eclipse possible. There's no other planet in our solar system that has this kind of possibility. While there are 166 moons orbiting 8 planets in our solar system, the moons are all either too close, too far away, too oddly shaped, too big, or too little to permit the kind of display that we saw 2.5 years ago. Our Earth is the only planet in our solar system that has this design feature. Thus, the solar eclipse is against all odds in any solar system. So it's possible that in the billions of galaxies, billions of planets, that the Earth is the only place that this happens. So really raised my appreciation of what we saw during the total eclipse. Scientists know the true wonder of something like this, with literally astronomical odds of this appearing anywhere else, and they really show their appreciation of the uniqueness of this little blue boat that we all share. And it's also possible that this might be the only planet in the whole universe that has water. 2 molecules of hydrogen, 1 molecule of oxygen that form the substance that's soft enough for us to take a bath in, but then hard enough that it can rip a hole in the side of the Titanic. This may be the only planet in the universe that has a rose or an oak tree. Also, our atmosphere is very unique. It's made up of hydrocarbons and oxygen mixed at just the right combination that radiates a signal from the infrared range, and it can be recognized by spacecraft far outside our solar system. So anybody going by way outside our solar system will see this little infrared signal. It's like we're leaving the porch light on. It's like a little beacon to travelers saying, here we are. Come and visit us. So like us humans, the Earth is most likely, very likely, in fact, a one-of-a-kind being in the entire universe. It's one thing we have in common with the Earth. So it really seems odd that the day to celebrate this amazing place we live on didn't come along earlier than 1970. So here's a little Earth Day history for you. It actually began way back in the second century, when they were still writing the Gospels. The Greek astronomer Ptolemy declared the Earth to be round. Okay, but all he had was mathematical guessing and figures. But he nailed it that early on. He thought the Earth was round, but there was no proof. No one had ever seen the Earth from any higher than the highest mountain. And of course, Columbus had not yet, sailed past the edge of the Earth. And it wasn't, in fact, until 1935, we're talking 1,800 years later, that a couple of guys from the U.S. Army Air Corps ascended to a record-breaking height of about 13 miles above the Earth in a helium-filled balloon. And this was over the Black Hills of South Dakota. And they got the first photograph that actually showed the Earth's curvature. And this was in 1935, the first proof, the first visual proof that the Earth was round. Up until then, we had just assumed it was, and of course, it was pretty much a fact by then, but this was the first visual proof that we had. Then, thanks to NASA, things started moving a little bit faster in the 1960s. Here is a photograph. This is the first photograph of the Earth as seen from the moon, and it was taken by the Lunar Orbiter 1 on August 23rd, 1966. The first photograph of us ever seeing the Earth, this was from the moon, and in 1966. And then in 1967, the Dodge satellite went up and from 20,000 miles away took this picture. Now, it probably looks good to you, but it's really low res, kind of a little blurry. In fact, NASA didn't even mention it in their press releases, so this picture kind of went unnoticed. But then, in December 21st, 1968, with a 3-man crew of the Apollo 8, which was the first crew, they're not the ones that landed on the moon, but they were the ones that went to the moon and kind of checked it out, they first saw what no human being had ever witnessed before. And as they orbited the moon, they were the first one to experience the extraordinary sight of the Earth rising above the moon's horizon. And there it is. a beautiful blue ball, blue marble floating in space. This photo has been described as the most influential environmental photograph ever taken. Many of the Apollo astronauts would make the point that the real value of their missions had been not in the discovery of the moon, but in the new perspective it gave them on the Earth they had left behind. And it is this photo, actually, that in 1969 inspired a man, a senator from Wisconsin, named Gaylord Nelson, to propose a day to honor the Earth and address the environmental concerns that were raising at the time. If you remember, in the early 70s, we had a fuel crisis going on in about 72 or 73. I remember a friend, my roommate, came in and said, you know, gas is going up. It's going to be over $1 a gallon soon. And I said, there's no way gas will ever be $1 a gallon. You know, it was like 24 cents, 35 cents a gallon at that time. And sure enough, it went up then, and it just kept on going up. So the first Earth Day, then Gaylord Nelson established the first Earth Day on April 27th in 1970. And Nelson hoped that Earth Day could, and I quote, he said, form a new national coalition whose objective is to put the quality of for human life up on par with our gross national product. So it was really about keeping the Earth clean and tending the garden. So here we are today, and we humans, you know, have been given dominion over this garden of Eden and the responsibility to tend it. So what does that mean for us? Well, I kind of like to think of our role here as on Earth and our relationship to the planet as if I was house sitting. So when I house sit for somebody, I have basically been given dominion over their property, and I've been asked to tend it for them. So they have flowers to be watered, you know, papers to be picked up, mail to be collected. I make sure the doors are locked and the property is safe. You know, if there are pets, I feed them, I walk them, exercise them. I clean up after myself. I make the bed when I sleep in it. I do the dishes. I vacuum. If the plumbing springs a leak, I'm responsible for calling a plumber and getting it taken care of so it doesn't cause damage to the house. If I accidentally break the Roomba, I replace it. Just common courtesy, but all while enjoying the premium cable package, the 70-inch TV, the swimming pool, and the hot tub that they have in their house. I'd be grateful for those luxuries, and you know that I was able to have. I love the pets and the plants just as if they were mine, and I replace what I use, and I try to leave the house better than when I found it. Imagine what would happen if the owners returned and found the plants all dead and the pets neglected and their basement flooded, you know, cigarette smoke in the house, dirty dishes in the sink. So we can think of those people returning to their home as our next generation, the next generation that entering the world where the earth has been ravaged and abused and taken advantage of. Now, Gaylord Nelson had another great quote, and he said, is it next? Yes. Awesome. This is Gaylord Nelson, a senator from Wisconsin who founded Earth Day. The ultimate test of man's conscience may be his willingness to sacrifice something today for future generations whose words of thanks will not be heard. Isn't that a beautiful quote? To do something selfless today for our future generations who we may not even be able to hear their words of thanks. Now, the ancient gods considered Earth a being of its own. They called her Gaia. It's a very powerful name. And they looked upon the earth as a goddess. And like our blood, you know, the earth circulates elements. It releases heat. The earth sweats. The earth gets ill. It takes salt water, filters it, and then releases it into our freshwater lakes and streams. The sunlight distills the water from the oceans so that it can go up and later fall as rain, and so refresh the earth and keep that cycle going. Yes, it's amazing as our bodies are. Gaia's body is pretty darn amazing itself and fascinating. So if we think of Gaia as like a sentient being like ourselves, then we can have compassion. We can have compassion on her, like we would our brothers and sisters around the planet, whom we pray for and protect and help when they're in need. So, how is Gaia faring in the face of this worldwide pandemic? Well, scientists say the guy is actually breathing much better now. She's breathing much better. Scientists say that in China and Italy, the air is now strikingly clean. A scientist, Marshall Burke at Stanford University, writes, in China, just 2 months of reduced pollution is likely to save the lives of 4,000 children and 70,000 adults. That's more than the pandemic has taken. In Venice, the Grand Canal, normally fouled by boat traffic, is running clear. There are rumors of swans and dolphins jumping around in the canals now. In Seattle, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Atlanta, the fog of pollution has lifted, and no doubt lives are being saved here in this country too because of that. Now, some scientists have compared, and this goes back a ways, when I heard this, probably into the 70s, the scientists have compared human beings to a virus infecting the earth. That we're slowly draining its life blood through fossil fuel production. We're damaging her lungs by clear-cutting rainforests. We're harming the Earth's immune system through atmospheric pollution. And if this metaphor holds up, then COVID-19 could be the Earth's immune system fighting back against this virus of humanity. Which means that if our efforts to heal and the damage that we're doing to the planet could mean something like this could never possibly happen again. If we're taking good care of the Earth and the Earth doesn't send its antibodies to try to defend itself, something like what we're going through might possibly never happen again. Here's a wonderful quote from Chief Seattle. He was one of the Indian chiefs who was very vocal, and he's known for his treatise on how we are one with the Earth. And he said this. Did I miss it? We don't have a slide for Chief Seattle. He said that humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together. All things are connected. So this pandemic has really illustrated, one, how pre-COVID lifestyles have affected our environment, and two, how we can change and adopt post-COVID in order to improve the planet we live on and keep that cycle going. A lot of us are working from home, riding bicycles, reducing non-essential travel. We're showing impressive results now, but we could soon return to the pre-COVID levels of pollution if we don't make some of these changes permanent. And then even if we do, without government intervention and cooperation with world governance, like we did in the Paris Climate Agreement, the progress will be painfully slow, perhaps too slow. So it's realistic to consider that our greatest weapon against climate change is our right to vote. So take a deep breath. Whew, that was a lot of information, right? Maybe not a lot of spiritual substance there, but I hope it at least gives you a new appreciation of the world we live on and keep you open and receptive to ways in which we as individuals can do our part to keep the earth clean for the next generations and for the earth's immune system, basically. I'm going to close with this amazing video from Pam Rose. She's one of our new Posse Award nominees, amazing voice of an angel, incredible songwriter. But she created this video that's a beautiful trip around the world, and it's highlighting humanity's coping with COVID-19 with the common mission to defeat this virus and to help create a healthier earth where something like this might possibly never happen again. It's 6 minutes long, but it's beautiful, and it's moving. It's powerful. It's going to take us into meditation, and it's called A Prayer for Our Time.
Ave Maria, grazia.
sacerdotes.
Maria, gratia plena. Maria, gratia plena. Ave, ave Dominus, Dominus tecum. Benedicta tu in mulieribus, et benedictus, et benedictus fructus ventris, ventris tu.
Jesus.
Beautiful, very emotional. Really shows how connected we are, how we're all going through the same thing, everyone around the world going through this. So keep the faith and know that you're not alone. Let's go into meditation now. If you'd like to get comfortable in your seats, take this amazing energy and those powerful images into our prayer time together, centering ourselves. Start slowing your breathing down and feel that air you're breathing, the air that could possibly be unique in all the universe. We plant our feet on the ground and feel the earth that is also possibly unique in the entire universe beneath you. Appreciate the power of gravity that keeps us grounded, the uniqueness and the diversity of the plants and animals and the humans that all live together in this one place. With your next deep breath, start rising up. Take your attention and rise up through your ceiling until you're looking down at your home. And then higher until you're seeing your neighborhood, your town, and seeing you're high enough to see for miles. And eventually you have that commercial jet's view of the earth below you. But we don't stop there. Keep rising and rising until you can see the earth's curvature. And eventually the edges. 2/3 of the earth's surface is covered with water, this amazing life-giving substance. We look at the earth's surface and just give appreciation for the perfect balance of conditions that make all this possible. And then as we hover in this cold quietness of space with the earth in front of us like a huge TV screen, we just send a blessing of thanks and gratitude to Gaia. A blessing of commitment to be responsible. To be a responsible house sitter for this home that we've been entrusted with. So let's just take this image that you've created in your mind of the Earth from outer space and into a few moments of silence as we hold that image of the earth, sending love and gratitude in the silence. Take 3 deep breaths together, and with each exhale, see yourself going back down closer and closer to the earth until you're safely back in your home. Ready? Big inhale and release slowly as the earth gets larger underneath you. Again, inhale, exhale, closer and closer. One more inhale and exhale. We're back in our chairs. We open our eyes and we are home. We give thanks for this garden and all of its abundance. And we say together, thank you, God. Together, thank you, God. And so it is.